Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. We call this the Live with Jacob and Kira Letras show.
And because, why do we do that?
Well, because it just, when I heard the name Kira Letras, it just sounded a little bit like Kathy Lee, and it sounded like a good title. Admittedly, it's not the best title.
So is Jacob something close to Regis?
I sure would like to be a millionaire.
And so, maybe so. It was close enough. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, any that we've still got. And from the University of Kentucky, from UK Hospital's Dietary Department, we have two dietary interns. First, and Kira, you're from Ohio.
Yes, Cleveland, Ohio.
From Cleveland, Ohio.
Isn't Kira, that like Michigan?
No. Go Buckeyes. Well,
actually, I said, gee, your voice sounds like a Michigander, and I've already insulted her before I even met her. Welcome to the show, Kira.
Thank you.
And also, Jacob, I have no idea where you're from.
I am from Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Oh, my goodness. So we're
That's flanked. Atlanta, isn't it?
We are.
Same as.
Yeah, suburb. Jacob LaQuire, welcome to the show, Jacob.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, due to a lapse in judgment here from the University of Kentucky, Manager of Communications Infrastructure.
For now.
Yeah.
It's been one of those days.
To talk to you about how to access us on the internet. Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the shows at WMKY.org. That's right, WMKY.org. That is the Morehead State Public Radio website. You can go there, listen to all the Morehead State Public Radio shows, but find your way over to Health Matters. There, once you get there, you will find a list of all the recent shows. You'll find a little summary, and most importantly, you'll find a link to the show's audio. Listen to it over and over and over. That will show up sometime around 4 days after the show airs. Usually that's on Tuesday. We do air, recorded on Saturday morning, so you'll usually get that around Tuesday. Sign up for the podcast, have it delivered to your device automatically, or say you want to interact with Health Matters, jump over to facebook.com/HMRadioShow. There you'll find a fan page for Health Matters. Leave us some feedback, leave us a comment, give us some show topics, ask your question, talk to Tony, look at some of the crazy stuff that gets posted in there. Some of it's fairly interesting. Tony does a pretty good job of keeping the more interesting topics on there. So we certainly encourage you to find us on Facebook and like us. Again, do a search for HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, flavonoids, and I'm going to explain why I am annoyed with flavonoids. Flavonoids, this is one of the hot topics in dietary medicine. This is the walnuts, the dark chocolates, the blueberries, all of those have flavonoids. But the problem is, to really get a decent amount of flavonoids, you have to eat some foods of which I am not willing to partake. It's just that simple. Again, a group of bioactive compounds extensively found in foodstuffs of plant origin. So right away, you got a problem, Rick.
Nope.
Plant origin.
Nope.
You don't have a problem.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
You know me better than that.
It appears that a diet that has these in it regularly is associated with a reduced risk of a number of chronic diseases. It has been shown to be associated with a reduced risk of cancer and cardiovascular diseases. These things seem to have antioxidant properties. Now, my first problem with flavonoids is we've been down this road before. We tried the antioxidant vitamins, convinced about 5 years ago, 10 years ago, that vitamin C, vitamin E, selenium, these antioxidant vitamins were going to be the answer. They were going to be the addition to your bacon, double bacon cheeseburger. You put the take that with some vitamins and everything would be fine. Now, we tried all sorts of really long trials with these. It did not work. Now we moved on to flavonoids. Again, the diet that has a lot of nuts, a lot of berries, a lot of fruits, a lot of plant products in it is a good diet. Now the question is, what if you get a walnut double bacon cheeseburger? Do those walnuts cancel it out? And the answer is no. That leaves you with some very unpleasant choices. The first flavonoid I'll talk about is the flavonones, and they're in artichokes. How about it, Rick? Artichokes.
I don't like them.
I know. Kira, artichokes, I mean, other than whipping them into an artichoke dip.
Yep. No, wait a minute.
Other than dip with cream cheese and sour cream or dipped in butter.
What about an artichoke heart?
Yeah, you eat artichoke hearts.
No.
See, I'll pick them out of my salad. I'll say,
no.
Gee whiz, who put this junk in my salad?
It has artichoke in front of it.
Yeah, there's nothing you can do. Well, okay, then you might want grapefruit or lime because that's two other.
Well, you set that joke up.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, and Kira mentioned dried oregano, but I'm
Is there another kind of oregano?
Fresh oregano.
Fresh oregano.
Yeah.
It's not dry. Is it
wet? Dried oregano is more concentrated than fresh oregano. So if you want to get a lot of flavonones, you get dried oregano. But here's the thing. I mean, honestly, if I am depending on dried oregano for a vital part of my diet.
Can we quit saying dried oregano? Can we just say oregano? Please?
It just doesn't work.
Do you eat your oregano wet?
Do I eat my oregano would be one of the questions. What, I mean, where would I get some oregano?
Mine usually has spaghetti sauce on it.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah, mm-hmm. You could do it. I mean, you could drop it into an Italian dish, right?
Yep.
And you put that on tomato paste, and all of a sudden you're getting some pretty hefty doses of flavonoids, mm-hmm. which I could do. But these other, do you eat, Jacob, artichoke hearts?
Occasionally.
You do. Wait a second.
I will engage in an occasional artichoke heart at a restaurant.
Okay. But you yourself don't rush home with your artichoke hearts to whip up a...
It will not be in my grocery buggy.
Okay, gotcha. I just want to be sure that I'm not out on a limb here because I just think, you know, this is not a part of the American diet. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
All right. Okay, fair enough.
I'm American. It's not part of my diet. So I would say you're right. It's not part of the American diet.
And the thing is, I can't get there from where I am.
Now, the question is, you're going to be going overseas soon.
I will.
Will you check and see if it's in the European diet? Just check.
Sure, I'll check.
I'm just looking at this list,
and I'm not seeing a whole lot of European foods there on the list, but we'll give it a shot. We'll see what happens. That's fair enough.
You mean you can't get American food in Europe? Is that what you're telling me?
In Paris, you can. Yeah, American food in Paris. That's a musical. Jacob, I'm interested. You and Kira have been a man and woman about town lately. You guys, explain to me how you got this rotation, what you guys are doing.
Okay, I'll go ahead and start off for us. We are dietetic interns at the University of Kentucky Hospital, and part of our program to finish off is to be out in the community in a place like Moorhead, Kentucky, doing work with individuals, whether from elementary school age to senior citizens, talking about healthy eating choices, talking about anything from heart healthy diets to carbohydrate counting with our senior citizens, or just how to pick up healthy foods at the grocery store with the fifth graders.
Yeah, tell me, Kira, about the Reality Store.
So the Reality Store was at the Fleming County Cooperative Extension Office through UK, and they had how many groups of fifth graders?
There were seven.
Seven groups of fifth graders that came, and they had different stations set up for getting their budget for the month, finding housing, transportation, paying utilities, clothing, lots of different things. And we were at the grocery section, so we had to sit with each kid and explain that the amount they paid for their groceries was dependent on how many children they had in their family, which they were assigned, and how much money they wanted to spend on their groceries. So if they wanted something that was thrifty, they were going to have to buy much more canned vegetables, not many fresh things, but they could spend a lot of money and get all organic and eat out a lot. So some of the kids definitely had a reality check with having a lot of kids and not being able to spend money on what they wanted to, while others had a high-paying job and no kids and had two cars.
I guess that in fact is reality. Although it's almost wasted on fifth graders because, you know, for them this is a theoretical exercise, and thank goodness we're finished at 2:30 and we go home. Whereas I would think for high school students things start to get more real. Mm-hmm. Certainly by the time you get into college, you're doing some serious reality stuff there. But the kids, they took it well.
They did. Yeah. I mean, we definitely even saw kids saying this is hard, and then teacher said reality is hard.
Now, you mentioned a farm tour.
Yes. So that was actually with a connection that we made at the Fleming County Extension Office, and it was great. We got to go to a dairy farm, a hog farm, and see goats and hogs. Sheep farm, a winery, a produce farm, and just really get out in the community in Fleming County.
Yeah. I have worked with hogs before.
I'd see where you're going with this.
No, hey, just to keep you on track. This, you know, so that you don't get too distracted.
How do you know I'm not a pig? You know what the difference is, right?
If this is a joke, I don't know the punchline of the joke.
Well, let's leave it that way. I'll tell you in the second fractional portion.
All right.
So maybe during the break, you could research what the difference between a hog
and a pig is. Okay. Fair enough.
Chances are I'm a hog.
Okay. So what did you think about the hog farm, though? The ones I know of in Flemingsburg are pretty big.
This one wasn't too big. A lot of the hogs they breed are for the 4-H students, and we got to hold week-old baby pigs, but they did have some rather massive
sows.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Ones.
Those are the ones you have to watch out for. Those are the ones when I was little. You would see if you could make it out of over the gate before the sow got you. That was fun on the farm. It was tagged with a little bit more of a serious ending to it. As a matter of fact, "You're it" is not what you want to hear when a sow's chasing you.
Yes.
Not a good thing. So you got a chance to get out and look around, but you did also, in addition to the reality story, you did some health fairs, right, Jacob?
Absolutely. So we did a health fair with the employees over at Guardian, and we got to sit down with some of them. They chose to be with us on their break time, and we did everything from BMI screening to different diet educations. And we also have done some health fairs for some senior citizens and just the general public. We did an Olive Hill health fair. That was an interesting experience in a double wide trailer that we had never been in before. So that was fun.
You've never been in a double wide trailer?
Never a double wide.
Okay. Well, I guess they don't have large trailer parks around Chattanooga.
Not too many.
Okay.
I already decided to go to Atlanta. I'm not going there twice.
Chattanooga and other parts of Atlanta don't have travel. I understand that. I'm just trying to keep up here. And also, but you looked at smoking cessation classes. Was this, were you taking a part as far as education goes with those, or what were you doing?
St. Clair offers, I believe it's a 14-week smoking cessation class. So we did 2 sessions for them on their nutrition component. And it was really informal. We just got to sit around a table and talk about general heart healthy eating. And when you quit smoking, you're not burning those 200 calories that you would burn while you were smoking. So that's why people often have weight gain. So just talking about general healthy eating and ways to not gain weight.
It is an unfortunate fact that cigarettes, in fact, are a reasonably effective diet drug. They do
cost me 15 pounds, but I gave them up, and I guess I'm healthier.
Supposedly. I mean, the numbers I heard was you have to gain 70 to outdo the bad effects of the cigarette. So that's,
I did quit smoking a long, long time ago.
Yeah, so you've got the health benefits. But at any rate, you know, you have to think about when you're doing smoking cessation, simply maintaining the same exercise level, the same caloric intake is not going to work.
Yep.
Is there a trick to lowering your, are there certain foods that are good for smoking cessation, or is it just overall calorie restriction?
There's no certain foods, mostly just watching, maybe snacking, since that's an easy way you can cut out 200 calories in your diet.
A lot of times it's easy to take on some of those extra sugary calories when you're not having to smoke. You want to fill it with something else.
Yeah, and one of the problems around here is that Mountain Dew and ALH take a
right.
place of, if you need an oral fixation and you're not able to get it through cigarettes, you go that way. We're going to let you decide what snack food that you would like to take for our break. We're going to take a break and come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Live with Jacob and Kira Litra show, because we are joined from the University of Kentucky Hospital. 2 dietetic interns have been in our region and were kind enough to drop by the studio to talk to us. First of all, from Cleveland, Ohio, Kira Litra. Hi, Kira.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
And apparently from Chattanooga and other parts of Atlanta.
Hey, close enough.
Close enough. It's somewhere. I mean, the whole thing just blurs after you get past Knoxville, I think.
Doesn't it just blur when you turn the show on?
Jacob LaQuire, welcome to the show, Jacob.
Hey, thank you for having us.
Our sponsor for the second time, flavonoids. I'm reminding you why I'm annoyed with flavonoids. The first fractional portion, we talked about these plant products that have antioxidant properties. Now, the problem is, just like with the vitamins, if you have a diet that is high in flavonoids, in other words, if you have a diet that's high in plant products, you have a lower risk of heart disease, a lower risk of cancer in some studies. We'll talk more about that in a minute. But adding these to the regular American diet has not been tested, and based on our experience with other additives to try to make the diet more healthy, probably doesn't work. So you're going to have to change your diet. We talked about the flavonoids. I'm giving up on them. Artichokes, grapefruits and grapefruit juice, oranges. I can tolerate oranges. Limes, lemons, and dried oregano. Dried oregano, Rick.
Come on.
I'm just saying, I'm reading this off there.
You know what I'm sending you for Christmas?
Dried oregano.
You're getting wet.
In a plastic bag. So those are the flavonoids. The flavones, once again, artichokes showing up again. Fresh parsley. Rick, do you eat parsley?
Yes.
You do.
I usually don't know.
You say, ooh, parsley.
But if it's laying there on the plate, I knock it away.
Can I have extra parsley on my entree? That's what Rick says when he the waiter.
I usually just say, can I have extra?
I set it aside. It looks like a weed. It looks like somebody dropped a weed on my entree. And so I set it aside. side. Kira, you eat it.
Yes, I do.
Large amounts? I mean, do you get double parsley on your...
I wouldn't say so. I was just wondering how much of these things you have to eat.
Because parsley has a lot of flavor.
I know it does.
But I assume you have to eat a certain
milligrams
amount.
Milligrams per 100 grams of food stuff. So how do you get 100 grams of parsley?
And of course, dried parsley is just out the roof, Rick.
Right.
Just pointing that out. I've never had dried parsley, though. I don't think. I'm not aware of it. Is it sprinkle?
I think you've had it on Italian
stuff. Yeah, I guess so. Well, if you don't like that, you can go with kohlrabi, red grapes, lemons, chicory, celeriac. Half of the stuff, I wouldn't even know it if I saw it.
I agree.
And so, thank you. I was wondering how out of touch I was. Flavanols. Now, here's something. Apples. Now, apples are not a great source of flavonoids. They're just not. They're good, but not very much. Cranberries, figs. I can handle that. American bilberries. You ever had bilberries?
Never heard of them.
No. I
like Bowberry biscuits from Bojangles.
But not bilberries. I don't think that. Black currants, not my favorite. Goji berries, don't know. Red onions. Rocket lettuce. Okay.
Nope.
A blank. Radishes. Now, I happen to like radishes. I'm okay with that. And the fresh capers, which sounds like a detective show to me.
People don't eat capers very often.
Really? Yeah.
I don't think so.
They're in some recipes, and I just
randomly
avoid those recipes. Now, the anthocyanins, now there you got something. Hazelnuts, strawberries, blackberries. Do I love blackberries?
I don't know, do you?
I can't get enough blackberries. I really...
You don't mind going into the weeds and getting cut up?
I'd rather have domestics, on a plate, but no. I mean, we can... The thing is,
How many do you get at your house?
You mow a path through the patch, and then you can just walk along and pick them.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't do that.
No, I don't, but still, I would.
I was going to say, I know you better than that.
No, well, the thing is, the only place we'll grow blackberries is on a hillside because the flatland, we want to use that for pasture. But if I were growing blackberries, I'd grow them in a flat place and I'd mow paths through them. It'd be real easy, but it's not. It's not. It's chiggers. You know that. I mean, blackberries and chiggers just go hand in hand. You're scratching, you're eating, you're scratching. That's the way you get blackberries in Kentucky.
You know, that's about second week of July?
Second week of July, usually. Although we were earlier this year. We had blackberries for 4th of July. I've never seen that here in Moorhead last year. Mm-hmm. We picked blackberries on the 4th of July. It was strange.
You're not going to get that lucky this year.
I don't think so. Raspberries. Red bilberries now also are the anthocyanins. Black grapes. Pears. I can eat pears. I can handle that. Mm-hmm. Aronia. Any idea? Starts with an A. Aronia. I'm sorry. Listen, if you're listening to this show, you're probably appalled that I don't know half of these flavonoid foods, but I just don't. And then finally, the flavanols. And these are where you see dark chocolate, green tea, which I've been working on. Blackberries are there. Beans, red table wine, pecans, peaches, apricots. Not fond of apricots, but I'll tolerate them. So there's a good source of flavanols, which makes sense. The other flavanols, cranberries, and again, the rocket lettuce that we don't quite understand, and elderberry juice concentrate. There you go. Just had some before I started the show. Just topped off my tank with a little elderberry juice concentrate. We'll talk about the health benefits of these flavonoids.
Is that like prune juice?
Elderberry juice?
Not familiar with it.
Not at all.
This is great. I mean, we're so far out in left field that the dietitians can't even rescue us.
No.
You know, Gene generally makes fun of us for not knowing this stuff, but I think this one would be even tougher for Gene.
That's why Gene didn't show up. She said,
oh no, they're doing flavonoids.
She knew she would be failed this miserably.
Gene, I want you to know, this is called radio sitting. We're taking care of your students. You're not here, but I bet you don't know anything about flavonoids either, and that's why
and
you got scared away
proof.
From the show. Yeah, I sent the article, and she said, I'm not touching that. We want to move on to something, though, that I think people do know more about, and this is the Mediterranean diet and its effects on cognition. And this might be important. It might not be important. I don't know. In 2010, the estimated prevalence of dementia was around 15% in people over age 70 in the United States. And again, by the mid-80s, you're up to 50% or so have some signs of dementia. Oxidative stress and vascular impairment. That is, we think that oxidation has a big deal to do with this. We are starting to unravel, particularly with Alzheimer's disease, how dementia works, but we're still working on it, and vascular impairment are important. It appears from some studies that the Mediterranean diet may be one tool we can use to try to reduce our risk and reduce our rates of Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. It's good for your heart, and it looks like it may be helpful. Now, Kira, I'll just start with you. Explain the Mediterranean diet. What are we looking at there?
The Mediterranean diet is mainly focused on getting lots of the non-starchy vegetables and fruits and filling your plate up with those, and also getting red beef occasionally, but focusing on fishes that have the omega-3 fatty acids in them, and you can also have chicken, but then including the monounsaturated fats like olive oil and nuts into your diet.
So more nuts. You mentioned non-starchy vegetables. Now, starchy vegetables are...
potatoes, peas, corn, and beans.
The good vegetables, the ones we like.
The ones everyone loves.
Are starchy.
Yes.
So the non-starchy vegetables, what am I looking at?
Broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, salad, greens.
Carrots.
Carrot, cucumbers.
Okay, pardon me while I... See, they're sitting at one end of the table, and on this end of the table, there's this huge lack of enthusiasm. No, I understand the Mediterranean. First of all, it is a lifestyle as well as a diet. The idea is that you spend a lot of time over the meal. It's a long meal. It's eaten slowly. It's eaten with company. You don't
if
eat by yourself.
I had to chew broccoli all the time. It would definitely be a slow meal.
Well, you and I would sit. We would have a glass of wine. There would be several courses, but they would be small.
Now we just set new wine.
Yeah, there's that. That wasn't even any good. You know, I was about to move
on. It took you a long time.
I'm going to have to stop for a moment and just tell you, that just stunk up the studio right there.
You know
I'm
it's good when you're the only one not laughing.
I am embarrassed. They're laughing at how bad that was. That's what they're laughing at. We're not going to ask them what they're laughing at. We're going to keep going. The Mediterranean diet, though, so it is it's a slower meal. It's not really much dairy products. From what I've seen, one of the differences between the heart-healthy American diet and the Mediterranean diet is that we do more dairy here in the United States, and they seem to focus more on fish. The drinks for that are wine, I suppose tea would be another one that would fit with the Mediterranean diet. Lots of nuts, lots of fruits, and unfortunately those non-starchy vegetables are an important part of it.
You can prepare them good.
Okay. So this study, the first one was reported at the annual meeting of the American Academy of Neurology. They had almost 700 Medicare beneficiaries, ages 65 or older, living in New York City. And now they did a dietary assessment and they said, well, how much of this Mediterranean stuff do you regularly eat? And this is important. They didn't try to change anybody's diet. They did not add a Mediterranean component to their ordinary diet. They just said, how much are you eating? A 61-item food frequency questionnaire. And then they ran an MRI scan, which is what researchers are doing now. They looked at the total volume of the brain, how much gray matter, how much white matter, and so forth. And they said, gee, what happens if you have a large Mediterranean diet? Now, the problem with this, obviously, is people who naturally, spontaneously ate a Mediterranean diet, although they did try to adjust for the fact that they came from different educational levels and so forth, there may be something fundamentally different about people who find themselves attracted to non-starchy vegetables. Certainly different from Rick and me. But they did find...
Actually, you know what? I do eat a lot of broccoli.
You do.
You may be surprised, but I do.
I'm not bad on broccoli, and I've been trying to eat more fish. What they found was a higher fish intake was associated with a larger total gray matter volume, a low meat intake in general, low red meat intake, a larger total brain volume as well. So the brains were bigger on the people who ate the fish and didn't eat much red meat. Higher fish intake, higher cognitive scores as well. Now, most of the improvement over the Mediterranean diet was, in fact, fish and meat intake. And they mentioned, well, there's a whole bunch of mechanisms. And we talked about this antioxidant. That's what everybody's looking for. And certainly with the nuts and with the fish oils, you have some antioxidant and anti-inflammatory effects. But still, there is this idea that eating this Mediterranean diet may be beneficial. Now, this was I like this comment from one of the reviewers of this at the American Academy of Neurology. He says, look, any therapeutic benefit likely reflects lifelong exposure to a Mediterranean diet. So the idea that you can change your diet at age 75 and make a difference, he says, is absurd. That's his words, is absurd. I think, first of all, for the older radio fans, go ahead. If you want to try eating fish, that's great. I am very concerned about changing the diet in the late 70s and early 80s. I am worried because I don't want to have a person to lose a lot of weight and lose strength and also lose the joy of eating. My father, the doctors felt that he might be developing diabetes and put him on a calorie-restricted diet when he was in his mid-80s, which I told him it was stupid. I told him, don't do that. What you need to do is to enjoy your life and enjoy your food, and there's nothing you can do at age 85 that's going to have a major impact. My mother-in-law ate pie for breakfast.
I'd eat ice cream for breakfast. If I get that age, I'm eating ice cream.
You're eating ice cream for every meal?
Every meal.
Okay.
Every meal.
Well, let me ask
I may you. Have a shake to go with it.
And then a sensible dinner at some point, but
depends
I'm not sure you're
going to... Yeah, definition of sensible.
I don't think you're even going to go sensible. But Jacob, when you're talking to people older, do you kind of account for age like this, or how do you approach your dietary counseling?
Absolutely. So anybody who's in the age range that you're referencing,
I thought you were going to say that you are.
People your age might as well just give up.
just stop. In the age range that we're talking about, 75, 80, and 85, you know, anything at that point is good, but changing your diet at that point might not have the effects that it's going to have for someone who's a lot younger. And you hit the nail on the head when you said that you don't want any individual that age to lose the joy of eating and to lose strength. We want them to get adequate protein and calories because we don't want any wasting or anything like that.
Second study, again on the Mediterranean diet. The initial report was in the New England Journal of Medicine, and they talked about the heart effect. So these people just went back and they looked at those people who were in that heart study of the Mediterranean diet. These people had type 2 diabetes or at least 3 of 5 cardiovascular risk factors. They either smoked, had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, they were overweight, or had a family history of heart disease. 2 of those 5 would get you in this study. And they had over 100 of them got the Mediterranean diet, what Kira has mentioned. Plus, they got a liter of olive oil a week. Now, they did not specify. That's a lot of olive oil, right? They did not specify. They did not say, well, here's what you're going to do with the olive oil. They just gave them the liter, and these people took it. Now, whether or not they used it to clean their aquarium or whether they used it to cook with is up for grabs. If someone gave you a liter of olive oil, you'd say, good, I mean, that just seems like a lot of oil to me.
I know. I mean, you can cook with it, but to just sit there and take a tablespoon of it or something, no thank you.
Okay. So I was thinking, that just sounds, every week you get another liter, whether you use it or not. Well they did that.
That's a lot of calories.
Yeah, it is. And then they did 30 grams of mixed nuts per day. That's walnuts, hazelnuts, and almonds. And again, that's the anthocyanins. That looks pretty good. And then 95, almost 100 again, were in a group. And they were told, well, just try to avoid fat if you can. Average age of these people, about 67 years old. They did a bunch of tests looking at their attention, their cognitive ability, their working memory, and things like that. And they found that if you added olive oil, you had better frontal cognition. You had better creative, better associative abilities of your brain, significantly better when they ran their tests. If you added nuts to the Mediterranean diet, 30 grams a day of mixed nuts, you had better memory, a composite index. Again, these changes, I don't know how much. I don't think you're gonna ace a comprehensive exam by adding 30 grams of nuts a day. I don't think that you're going to invent something or have an art exhibit because you've got a liter of olive oil, although now that I think about it, you could do something artistic with a liter of olive oil, I guess. But the point is, I don't think it's going to necessarily help your creativity.
You couldn't.
But, well, thanks. You don't think I could do something with a liter of olive oil?
You said creative.
What if I had, all right, so I take a liter of creative olive oil. I don't know what that is. All right.
This should be good. Let's hear it. This should be good.
Well, it would be a performance art. That's the first thing, because I don't think I could do it.
Now I know your dream.
I'm figuring olive oil, and then I'll get some, I'll put plastic bags on my feet, and we'll have a towel floor.
That's not creative. You do that every weekend.
No, if you saw me fall down, I would fall down so creative. I'd be flailing my arms. This would be, it would go viral, I'm certain, if I took a liter of olive oil and spilled it on the floor, and then I could do something.
I'm pretty sure
this.
That you could win America's Funniest Home Videos.
Well, I do that every day, Rick. That's not even a challenge anymore. But you take the olive oil, and let's say you actually ingested it rather than pouring it on the floor and doing a performance piece, then supposedly you're going to be more creative. You're going to have better associative abilities. You can put things together better. The problem was, of these people, and again, they had about 100 in each group, they really didn't have any cases of dementia. They didn't prove a whole lot. So again, you look at this, and what we're saying here is, when you look at the Mediterranean diet, this is a good ideal diet to shade your diet for. It is not something that you want to change as you get older, just suddenly try to change the Mediterranean diet. And the results, although they do seem to be beneficial for heart disease, they don't seem to, it's not like your mental capacities blossom under that. Is that fair, you guys think?
Right.
Fair to say.
Okay. So that's what we've got. Not necessarily an amazing thing, but a quick summary of the Mediterranean diet. And I might point out that is UK hospital dietitian approved information about the Mediterranean diet. Fair enough, Rick?
Fair enough, Tom.
All right. I got one here. I love this. This turned out to be an unexpectedly delightful piece of research.
As long as it's quick.
All right. So this is a question about teaching our children how to eat, how parental feeding practices develop emotional eating.
Did you do this?
I did this. The question is, did you reward your kids with food when they were young?
Maybe ice cream.
If they did something good, you give them ice cream or something like that.
Maybe if they behaved.
Yeah. So, Kira, I mean, this is pretty common, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I bet you didn't do it.
Oh, we have birthday cakes. You know, I mean, food was a big part.
So you give them a birthday cake because they got a year older.
For example, I mean, there are other rewards. I mean, sure, if we say, if you can, you know, we'll do this thing and then we'll get something to eat. I think at the very least you'd do that. You'd say, okay, yeah. You know, if you just hang on for a little bit longer, we'll go get some ice cream. Would that make you happy? That's what we did.
Well, yeah, it would make me happy, but I wasn't your kid.
You're gonna blow this. Rick right now is going, ooh, ice cream. This sounds
Tony,
good.
That's how you get these shows over.
5 to 7 year old children in the laboratory, they assess whether these feeding practices, and they had 41 parent-child groups, consumed a standard lunch, they completed a questionnaire, and then they participated in a research procedure to induce child emotion and observe their consumption of snack foods. Now, this research procedure to induce child, how do you do stress eating for a 5 to 7 year old kid? Here's how you do it. You're going to like this. We're not going to have time for it, but you're going to like it anyway.
For this, Tony, you can go over.
Okay. The children had a selection of small toys. They chose one. They were going to get that toy when they finish the task.
Great.
So here, you get to pick this toy. We'll give it to you when you finish. Now, the task is you color a page. It has numbers 1 to 6. You color the 1s with yellow. You color the 2s with green. I don't know what color it was, but the key thing was
You have 6 colors.
You color the 6. Well, no, you don't. That's the thing. You color number 6 is purple. That's the last one you color in is purple. So you're busy coloring along. You're a 5-year-old kid. You got a toy as soon as you finish coloring, but there's not the purple. The purple is gone. When
what
they got to the purple, they realized the purple was missing. The researcher told the child that because they had not completed their coloring, they couldn't have the toy.
It's just wrong.
This is horrible. They
did
said
you do that when you were?
They would. Here's what they said. This is great. They said, okay, I'm going to look for the purple crayon. While I'm looking, here's some snack foods. So they gave the kid some snack foods, and these were things like potato chips, cookies, chocolate, and you could eat anything you want to, and then they would find the purple crayon, and the child would be able to finish. But the child was distressed. They had them draw a happy face to tell how happy or sad they were, and they drew sad faces because they were not going to get the toy because they had not they didn't have the purple crayon.
And the moral of the story is,
stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion, and we'll tell you how it turned out.
Hello, and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Live with Jacob and Kira Litra show.
Boy,
because
are we live. Well, you can't stop laughing.
No, because we were talking during the break. How would it be? You go to work every day. You
we
get
were
paid
talking. You were laughing.
Crayons from kids. This is your job, and hopefully you'll get a Nobel Prize for
Did
it.
Did you ever stop to think that maybe that's what I do every day?
That's right. Mr. Internet there, you withhold email access from health professionals.
It's the same thing as shutting off people's Facebook.
I know. So you're good at this, but I'm not. I feel
or
sorry
Netflix.
For the kids.
Netflix really gets them off.
Meanwhile, we have two guests in the studio that we don't want to forget about, and they have all their crayons
Since
with them.
We're live.
First, from the University of Kentucky Hospital Dietary Internship, and they are in the region. They're working out in the community rather than at the hospital. First of all, from Chattanooga, Tennessee, is Jacob LaGuire. Hi, Jacob.
Hey.
And finally, from Cleveland, Ohio. That's a part of Michigan, actually. They say Cleveland, Ohio. It's Southern Michigan. It's Kira Litras. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
Our sponsor for the final time, flavonoids. Why I'm annoyed with flavonoids. And again, we talked about this.
You don't even know flavonoids.
Well, that's true. Obviously,
I mean,
the dried oregano, the grapefruit in my diet, my artichokes.
Give me that fire truck.
Yes. My chicory. Yes, chicory. The more chicory I eat, the more I'm confused, I think. So that doesn't work.
Well, that's what causes
elderberry juice concentrate. But you do have, I mean, this is your blackberries, your blueberries, apples, dried cocoa powder, dark chocolate, green tea. I have these flavonoids, and now we're going to see. I'm hoping that rather than vitamins, people would not consider them to be a healthy food additive, but rather really a different way of eating. If you eat a diet with these things, and obviously due to my confusion, you know that I don't, then supposedly you're healthier. Now, there was a couple of things that they've done. Apparently, both Parkinson's and Alzheimer's disease rates have, this diet has been linked to lower rates of those neurodegenerative diseases. So we have some hopes there. Again, linked, not not necessarily causative. Keep in mind, no one came in and switched these people's diets at a young age and enforced the dietary changes. Rather, they found that people who naturally like these foods seem to have lower rates of Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's. Whether or not the diet is the answer, or perhaps it's the fact that you like chicory and grapefruit, if you do those things, you're strange enough, apparently, you won't get Alzheimer's disease. Cancer is actually not really very good. The Iowa Women's Health Study investigated this in 34,000 postmenopausal women observed from 1986 to 2004. It did, flavonoids intake was associated with a reduced risk of lung cancer, but especially if they had stopped smoking, but there was no effect on the risk of other cancers. So unfortunately, flavonoids did not seem to have a protective effect in the Iowa Women's Health Study, and that was around 35,000 people. So again, the benefits of flavonoids, still somewhat theoretical. Diets that happen to be high in these plant products seem to be good, and we've talked about it, but what I hear over and over again among my circle of friends is, oh gee, that dark chocolate would be really good. Not that I'm going to change the way I live or anything like that. I'm just going to have the same stuff, and I'm going to eat dark chocolate because it is probably better than milk chocolate, but that's about all we can say. Now, when we left you last time, we were tormenting children, in fact. 5 to 7 year old children.
Did they start listening to the show too?
Okay. That's actually of the minimum quality I will accept on this radio show, Rick. Congratulations.
You have standards?
If you heard this joke that Rick just made, that was if you look at the joke-o-meter, that was actually above the minimum level necessary for health matters.
They all are. We have no bar.
So these are 5 to 7 year old kids. If they can finish coloring this thing, they will get a toy that they chose out. They chose themselves. They will get to take that home with them. However, the researchers have withheld the purple crayon.
Cruel.
I know. And while these kids are in emotional limbo, while they are drawing crowny faces and they're worried about the toy, they are offered potato chips. They are offered snacks. Let's see. They place 6 bowls of snack foods in front of the child. Pre-weighed bowls. They have potato chips, chip cookies, chocolate buttons or chocolate drops. They do have carrot sticks and green grapes if they were to choose the carrot sticks or green grapes. But who's, honestly, when you are about to lose a toy, when you can't find the purple, who's going to go with grapes? I don't see it. Maybe you would squash the grapes and try to smear that in the purple section if you were creative. The children were told they could eat any of the snacks or play with nearby toys. The researcher looked for the crayon after 4 minutes with 6 bowls in front of them and their future in the balance. The researcher found the missing purple crayon and gave it to the child. They completed the task. So there was a happy ending there, although there was a real tension in the middle. The control group, they got the purple crayon, they colored, and then they had some snack bowls and they said, you can help yourself to this, or you can play with toys, whatever you want to do while we clean up. And it turns out that the distressed kids ate more. And they especially ate more if the parents had a habit of either rewarding them or trying to put them on a diet. Apparently, if you try to put your child on a diet, they respond with emotional eating. You take the purple away and they will chug down the snack foods is what I hear.
Yep,
so aside from the food we eat, do you have recommendations regarding how you approach food with your kids?
Our greatest recommendation for food with kids is just to have a healthy relationship with food. And if your child is a little overweight, never stress dieting or counting calories. Just stress kind of meeting them where they're at, and they will grow into their weight eventually.
Absolutely. Weight maintenance rather than weight loss in children.
Okay. So what you try to do is you dial back just a little, but you don't really put your kids on a strict diet. And on the flip side, promising them food if they complete a certain task or if they will please be quiet, that sort of stuff. Again, you may win in the short term. You may have a temporarily quiet child. But in the long run, this sets up a cycle where food is treated as something other than nutrition. And unfortunately, it does have long-term repercussions. So that advice to our young parents. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got to switch gears, Rick, again. I've got to do some housekeeping here. This, I think, is a pretty important thing. This came across my desk actually back on May 15th, and I thought we ought to try to get it on the show. You know, they've got a new diabetes drug. There's one called Invokana, and it's being advertised heavily on TV right now. These are, they're the glyphosins, the canagliflozin, dapagliflozin is Farxiga, and empagliflozin is Jardiance, and these are 3 new diabetic medicines. The FDA issued a warning on May 15th that they may be associated with something called diabetic ketoacidosis. acidosis. It's where your sugar metabolism runs rampant and you build up acids in your body. Now, the problem with these drugs, the thing that annoyed me when these drugs started, and I'm sorry this is even more than the flavonoids, this bothers me, is Invokana came on the market, and it doesn't. Keep in mind, you have diabetes because you don't have enough insulin to manage your sugar. Either your body is resistant, that's the type 2 diabetes that happens to adults, or you simply don't make any insulin, and that's the type 1 diabetics that go into a coma if they don't get their insulin every day. Well, we're going to ignore all that. We don't care. We don't care about any of that. We're just going to make you pee more sugar. That's what these drugs do. So forget the metabolism, forget all those harmful effects on your eyes and your kidneys and your heart and everything else. Let's just try to make you pee more glucose. And someone thought that was a good idea. Now, if your doctor thought that was a good idea for you, I apologize. I mean, your doctor knows your situation and I don't, but these drugs seem idiotic to me. I'll just say that. Again, the names Invokana, Farxiga, or Jardiance, these are all new drugs, and they were introduced in, I think, 2013 for diabetes. They specifically say the type 1, the zero insulin teenagers should not be on them, but they put adults on them. And I'm telling you, talk with your doctor if you're on that drug. My prediction, I'll just make this prediction here on the radio. You can remember that I said this and remember how stupid it was that I said this. I don't think these drugs will last through Christmas. I just think the idea of ignoring diabetes and simply peeing the sugar down to the level you want is such a stupid idea that I cannot see these drugs adding anything meaningful to diabetic management.
Won't it take longer, though, to expose that? Christmas is not, I mean,
well,
the
FDA, I know, the FDA has already issued a warning. 20 cases where people treated with these medications came in unexpectedly to the hospital with diabetic ketoacidosis, which is a very serious, a life-threatening problem with their diabetes. And I think if that's the tip of the iceberg, if we start to see people start to report more of those cases, you're right. The lack of effectiveness, the stupidity of it's not going to get them off the market in 9 months. But if they actually cause harm, and I think they may come off the market sooner. But I wanted to make sure we had a chance to talk about that because, frankly, those medicines, they really do annoy me. They just, on the face of it, you can't imagine why a person would prescribe that. Now, again, I recognize that one of the problems with this radio show is that people listen. I don't know why they listen. I'm
clueless. Aren't you just thankful you don't know why?
Yeah, but for some reason they listen, and I don't want to stand between a person and their doctor. It may be that in your case, your particular case, other medicines have been tried, other medicines were unsuccessful, and you went with this as an add-on or something like that. But I will just tell you that I have no faith that all these medicines are going to make it through the end of the year. Again, when you look at the way they work, it is not the way that I think would lead to better management of diabetes. It just seems silly to me. That's all I'm saying. We got a little bit of time left.
Just a little.
The Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, which who could argue with these guys?
So why do they have to put responsible medicine in there?
Well, because they are fed up with the...
Being irresponsible?
Yeah, with people who just want to make money, with people who don't pay attention to things.
Don't you think that's kind of an indicator that when you have to put that in your title, that you really want people to focus on the responsible part?
Yeah.
Because
Physicians
why?
Committee, I mean, you don't care. There's lots of committees. This is the one for responsible medicine. They're in Washington, D.C., which is where
what
any responsible...
What kind of
medicine is there? Well, there's the kind of thing where you make money and you stamp out wrinkles or you introduce laser treatments for...
You don't know anything about that whole profitable medical stuff.
Sure.
You're an intern.
Granted, I do not know how to make money. That's why I'm a primary care physician.
Exactly.
That's true. But this is what they said. They gave a list of the 100 restaurant salads that are worse than a Big Mac.
Ooh.
Now, a Big Mac, and I don't know how you dietitians feel about this. You can chime in. But a Big Mac apparently is the epitome. That is the exemplar of a bad diet. That is, I mean, you know,
it's doesn't have like 3 pieces of bread.
It's what's got lettuce
sugar
in it, and it's got the beef, Black Angus. I don't know something. it does. It's got 550 calories, 29 grams of fat, 10 grams of saturated fat, 75 milligrams of cholesterol, and it's got almost 1,000 milligrams of sodium.
Yep.
None of those is particularly the kind of target you're shooting for with your food.
Mm-hmm.
So Big Mac is just, if you eat it, you're just, you are scum.
Mm-hmm.
and
you know what the beautiful thing is? In my lifetime, I've never had a Big Mac.
I don't think I have either.
Really?
No.
Well, you should. I mean, let's face it.
No.
You have.
Tony, are you the only one here that eats Big Macs?
Jacob?
Once.
It's like,
I don't like that many this week.
This is dietary hazing. When he got introduced into the dietary fraternity, they made him eat a Big Mac just to make sure
empathize
he was serious about it.
Patient.
No, I have had Big Macs. Right. I have had them. You know,
apparently way more than me.
Yeah. Well, if you've never had them, yeah. Well, let's face it. You start with zero, you're gonna get them. I have had more Big Macs than you have.
Yeah.
But remember those.
I'm proud of that.
550 calories, 1,000 milligrams of sodium. Now here's some, and this. I guess this kind of bothered me. I'll just bring it up. Applebee's fried chicken salad. 1,000 calories, 1,100 calories, 2,500 milligrams of sodium, 77 grams of fat, 21 grams of saturated fat. All those numbers far more, almost twice as much as a Big Mac. That's a fried chicken. Now, admittedly, yeah, it's fried, but it is a salad. You go and eat that thing. And see, I, meanwhile, have restrained myself to eating a Big Mac while you're just throwing the calories away with this chicken salad.
You're soon to be Big Mac.
Yeah. Applebee's grilled shrimp and spinach salad. It's got spinach in it. It's got seafood, sort of. I mean, shrimp they're insects, but still, they like seafood. And it's 1,000 calories, 66 grams of fat.
Tony, twelve years ago, was eating at a Long John Silver's and then got a salad, and it was a good salad. They put chicken on the fried chicken on it, but you know, I went back and looked at the nutritional value of that and found out it had close to 1,800 calories in just that salad. And so, yeah, the salads are deceiving.
They are deceiving. So you know where I'm coming with this. And first of all, you guys have the education to know this. I will accept. First of all, I'm going to take away your top option, which is to put the salad dressing on the side. Okay, everybody does that. That is not on the table here. How else can you tell? We've got lettuce. We've got spinach. We've got wholesome meats. I don't know what that means, but I just mean that. What do you look for in a salad? Because it really is hard to get these. The nutritional information is supposed to be on the menu, but it really is hard to get that information. So what kind of things are you looking to avoid?
I would say look to avoid anything that might say fried along with your salad.
Yes.
Last time I checked, you can't fry lettuce, but you can fry the toppings. So avoid that. And then I would look for things that were, you know, fillers such as nuts, berries, other vegetables besides your calorie-dense fried meats.
Okay, so what you're saying, you would look for the nuts and you would avoid the cheese.
Yes.
Avoid the cheese, correct.
Okay, so
the cheese.
But too many nuts on a salad can be a bad thing as well.
Absolutely.
Especially if they're candy coated.
Oh, yes. Okay.
Pecans.
Candy nuts. Okay, fair enough.
Candy pecans.
You're taking away the good stuff. I mean, why would you, honestly, why would you eat a salad if it didn't have some
life
kind of.
Life is pointless at this point.
Oh. No, get some nice.
Rick has that. You've taken away my purple crayon look.
I don't want the fire engine.
But
we were almost to the end of this show.
I know. Well, here's one. Denny's Avocado Salmon Caesar Salad. It's got salmon. It's got avocados. It's got Caesars. It's 860 calories. It's again the Big Mac's 550. So you know it's tough. I agree with you. It makes sense. I imagine they put enough cheese on that sucker. I mean, knowing Denny's, I think there's going to be enough cheese and the dressing.
Yeah, and salmon and avocado are good fats, but they're still fat. And they still have a lot of calories, so that contributes quite a large amount of calories, I'm sure, to that salad, as well as the Caesar dressing.
You've got the IHOP. And
I'm sorry. Who gets a salad at IHOP?
I'm just laughing. You've got the IHOP. This is the, who gets a salad at IHOP? But if you did go and you got that crispy chicken Cobb salad, again, with grilled chicken, you're still looking at 1,130 calories, and you're looking at 635 milligrams of sodium. So, you honestly, you've got to, as they mentioned, look at the toppings, look at the dressing, and try. And this, when you look at that. And for goodness sakes, whatever you do, just don't order a salad at IHOP. This is a stupid thing from the start. I'd like to thank our guests, Jacob LaQuire from Chattanooga and Kira Letras from Cleveland, Ohio, UK hospital dietitians, for showing up on our show. And Rick, I'd like for you to get us off the air promptly.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org, or just visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
used along with diet and exercise, Health Matters is the first in a new class of diabetes radio shows that have proven to lower sugar levels in adults with type 2 diabetes.
Women who listen to Health Matters may get used used to infections of the diaper area. Symptoms include a foul odor, yellow discharge, or itching.
Glad you read that one. Health matters may lead to dehydration, which may cause you to feel dizzy, faint, or weak, especially if you stand up. You may be at higher risk of dehydration if you take water pills or are older than 65 years old.
Yeah, when you get old, you've got that risk of dehydration. Health matters may cause serious side effects, including high potassium in your blood or low blood sugar. Signs and symptoms of low blood sugar include headache, drowsiness, dizziness, confusion, or feeling jittery.
Before you listen to Health Matters, tell your doctor if you have kidney problems, liver problems, or get this, or have other medical conditions.
Just be sure and tell
whatever
your doctor
that is.
Yeah, about everything. Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week. Make a healthy change in your life. And tune in next week as we discuss how to glucose without getting sticky on Morehead State Public Radio.